Okay, so on the line we have Stuart Monckton. Stuart Monckton is an editor for Green Left Weekly. Maintains a lot of the coverage of regularly follows politics, obviously, because he's an editor of Green Left Weekly, and he's also known as for being a comedian, known as Carlo Sands. But we're not really going to be talking about that. We're going to be having a discussion with him about Venezuela. Good morning, Stuart.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah. Just wanted to start by, asking, what is the kind of political situation in Venezuela now with these sort of opposition kind of protests, and what is n the nature of the opposition and what the mainstream media basically isn't telling us about them?
Well, situation is one of, I think that Venezuela is facing a sustained attack, really, on its democracy. That is being spearheaded inside the country by the opposition, which, if you follow the mainstream media, you would get the impression that you're seeing a mass and democratic peaceful protest movement that's facing government repression. But on the ground, the reality, when you unpack it, is actually very, very, very different. It's not just a question of the institutional legitimacy of the Nicolas Maduro government, an elected government ahead of a political movement that's won the overwhelming majority of more than 20 elections in the past 20 years. It's not simply a question of that, but that the opposition forces, despite winning control of parliament in December 2015, has been unable, even in the face of quite serious economic problems, to build up any significant political support beyond its base, and to actually force the government out, which is its stated goal when it won the elections in December of 2015 for parliament, which is only one of the five branches of the Venezuelan state. When they won that, they immediately stated their goal was to remove Maduro, even though they don't have either the institutional or political mandate to do anything of that sort, rather than seek to put up measures that would help resolve Venezuela's economic crisis. They went down that path. And when they found that path increasingly blocked, the response has been, particularly now, since early April, has been essentially an extremely violent response involving a campaign of very violent street actions, resulting in, now I think we're looking at least 30 deaths, which, again, if you read the media, the impression you get is that this is a result of government repression, and yet actually, while the single largest group responsible for the deaths have actually been violent protests. We're talking organising riots, attacking public institutions. Most infamously, they attacked a maternity hospital and forced the mothers and the small, like a whole lot of newborn babies to evacuate. We're talking the destruction of health clinics, of public institutions, of barricades set up on fire, and these are generally outside of the poor areas where the opposition has very little support. And that this campaign of destruction and violence, which then gets represented in the media as peaceful protests being repressed, is being matched by an external attack on Venezuela, really spearheaded by the United States, but taking the form of the Organization of American States, which has long been an instrument of U.S. foreign policy in Latin America, has now passed a vote to begin an investigation into Venezuela, to open up the path to invoke its democratic charter, which would see Venezuela expelled from the organization. A similar measure was taken in 1962 to expel Cuba from the organization. In response to this, Venezuela has announced it will begin withdrawing from the OAS. It's not going to sit around and wait to be expelled. It's going to is beginning to plan to withdraw. And on top of that, you have the US sanctions, and you have the comments from the US officials, including the head of the US Southern Command, which is the US section of the US military responsible for Latin America, that basically, you know, threaten intervention. And it's inside Venezuela, it's very important to get a sense of how unpopular the opposition's actions and the OAS and the US intervention's actions actually are. While it's both the opposition and the government suffer relatively low support in Venezuela, and there's a growing number of people who don't necessarily identify with either. A recent polling by an independent polling firm, one of a very well-respected independent polling firm in Venezuela, found about 9 out of 10 people reject these opposition protests, like the use of, they call them the garimbas, basically violent street protests involving burning barricades and rioting, which caused incredible disruption to people's lives. We've had at least one death from someone who couldn't actually get to a hospital, but generally people can't move around. And there's also accounts of people who are chavistas or, just poor being violently attacked. Yes, bystanders has been violently attacked. 9 out of 10 people reject this. There's something like about 83%, like it's over 80% don't trust the OAS and don't like the OAS. And similar numbers explicitly reject any international intervention into Venezuela, and they're quite decisive examples however frustrated people might be with the situation, whatever their exact attitude is to the Maduro government, they completely reject what's happening, and yet we see in the international media the opposite being presented, that there is a popular mass movement against an unpopular government. But it actually, the reality is quite clear that it's the actions of the opposition, even though that are actually being rejected.
Stuart, I was just interested in the sort of it's been described as a constitutional crisis, or that the National Assembly. So my understanding is that, was it December 2015? You were saying the National Assembly elections were.
December 2015, the opposition won a majority in the assembly. Yes.
So my understanding is that the opposition, the right wing, won 109 out of about 160 odd seats, and the PSUV, the socialists, won 55 seats, and then the Court of Returns or whatever, the Supreme Court has ruled. 3 of those 109 candidates for the right wing were invalid because of vote buying and dodgy practice. However, the right wing opposition refused to accept that ruling and has tried to swear in these 3 people who they've said are not valid. So the Supreme Court's response is, well, the whole parliament is not valid until you accept our ruling that those people were not legitimately elected.
Yes. I mean, that's more or less. I mean, it's got to be clear that it wasn't just... Basically, what's at stake is the supermajority. That is, the opposition won a majority, but if they can win... if they hold two-thirds of the seats, it grants them many more power, basically. That they can, they can do a whole lot more things. It's not just 3. It's actually what happened was in December that the same month, in the immediate aftermath of the elections, the Supreme Court litigation. So it's not even a question that these deputies have been necessarily found guilty, but they ordered an investigation, not just of 4 deputies, not even 3, of 4. 2 were of the opposition. 1 was elected on an indigenous list that aside to the opposition, and the other was PSUV. It's the 3 that those 3 that vote with the opposition are the decisive ones, because if they are sworn in and they are accepted, then the opposition is the majority. However, what the opposition first did in January was then to swear them in anyway. Whereas the Supreme Court was saying we'll have an investigation into these allegations of electoral fraud and vote buying, and you cannot swear them in until the outcome of that investigation. And so then the Supreme Court declared that the National Assembly was in contempt of court, which it was. And initially they backed down. However, in July they then swore them in again. So you can see the move, particularly in July. I mean, it's quite clear that the opposition is trying to manufacture a lot of this constitutional crisis. And then the latest violence erupted after. After a whole period of this sort of unclear situation, the government asked the Supreme Court whether or not, basically, how it can proceed. I mean, does it have to? It's got to put a budget in. So it doesn't actually have to submit its budget to the National Assembly when the National Assembly has been declared in contempt of court. And the Supreme Court made a ruling that it wouldn't have to. Now, this caused an uproar, and you know, the media described it as a Maduro's coup and all the rest of it. And totally, for the media, there is no separation of powers in Venezuela, and yet what happened next totally defies that, because within a day or two, the Attorney General then ruled that the Supreme Court was actually violating the Constitution. The Attorney General is has also been appointed by the government, is you know, associated with the political movement of the government. You know, if this is a dictatorship that controls all branches of the government, why have you got the Supreme Court ruling one way and the Attorney General ruling the other? If it's all just agencies of Maduro's communist dictatorship, it doesn't actually make any sense. Now, the thing is, this ruling, you know, lasted a day or so before they, on the advice of the Attorney General, they overturned the Supreme Court, reversed the decision. And yet that's what sparked this violence. Now, if what sparked the violence was that move by the Supreme Court, it would have lasted a day. And yet it's still going. It's been going since April 4, and there's no sign it's going to end. What's more, the immediate demands are basically to bring down Maduro, to bring on elections, which are scheduled for next year. They don't actually directly result. And I think the most revealing thing about this and the opposition's manoeuvres and their obsession with this whole thing is at no point have they actually developed any policies to resolve the economic crisis. And this explains why, despite the fact that there's a serious crisis in the country, the opposition hasn't been able to extend its support. Because rather than try and solve any of those problems, they've just tried to bring down the government. Which, particularly when you consider who these people are, essentially the people leading this movement are the same people who led the 2002 military coup that overthrew Chavez, kidnapped him, and until basically a rebellion of loyal soldiers and the poor returned him to office. I mean, it was literally the same faces, and they show really in the parliament they're obsessed with freeing what they call political prisoners who are largely in jail for violence, similar campaigns of violence that happened in 2014. They do things like, they want to bring down impeach Maduro. You know, they take down photos of Chavez. That was one of the things one of the assembly's votes to remove the photos.
Unfortunately, Stuart, we're running very low on time now. We're going a bit over time. We actually need to move on to another part of the program. Don't even have any time for any final comments, but thanks for your time on the program, and what you might follow up with you to, you know, talk more about, you know, because it seems like there is actually a lot happening in Venezuela and we could probably almost spend all day talking about it. Yeah, thank you very much, Stuart.
No worries, man.
Thank you.